How We Met Your Mother is the How I Met Your Mother rewatch podcast with me, Josh Radner, and series co-creator Craig Thomas. Follow How We Met Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
On WGR.
All right, Sal time. Here I am with my broken everything. The laptop screen is cracked. The headphones are whatever this constitutes. The tape and the tilt and the whole thing. What a time to be alive. Sal Capaccio. I've missed Sal. I miss everybody when I'm gone for 11 days. But sometimes Sal and I will text. Do we do that at all? Do we have any conversations over the break here, Sal, or about anything? I'm not sure.
I don't think we really have, to be honest with you. Sometimes
we talked about Eli Kimball. That's what it was.
You're right. We did. You're right. That's I remember that. It was early on in your break. It was early last week when he announced there. It was right after what, July 3rd was the day that he announced.
Right.
So it was that weekend.
It was that Friday. Elijah Kimball of Canisius High School, where my son attends, one of the top, if not the top, high school football prospects in the state, chose Syracuse, and Sal was all over that. In fact, when I saw, they called it the commitment, and it was like 3 minutes since it had been announced, and Sal was there first. Like, it's Syracuse, you beat me to it. I was going to text you, having watched a lot of his games. Really elite player, so
yeah,
good for Syracuse.
That's awesome to hear that, and I hear he's a really, really good kid, too. You know, I said, we call them kids now. I know they are kids, right? But, I mean, even people, even NFL players I call kids sometimes. But, you know, it's great. And I would say, I think he's the highest recruited player out of this area since Gronk. And then Gronk actually left, though, his senior year, went to Pennsylvania.
Right.
We get some Division I players here and high, you know, level recruits, but generally not as widely, highly regarded. I think he has close to 40 offers, including like Ohio State, Oregon, to, you know, not go to schools like that and to choose Syracuse. Of course, I'm super happy about it. I think that's awesome. Super happy for him that he's here at Canisius, no doubt about that. I will say, though, in this day and age, this isn't his fault or anybody else's who's committing. Until he's on campus, it just doesn't resonate as much as it used to because of all the ways that people now decommit, they get re-recruited, the NIL money, all the things that happen between the time they verbally commit to the time they actually show up.
He and my son are in the same grade year, and I remember asking my son one day after school, how was school today? He's like, great, Eli dunked on me in gym. So there was that, and also, like, that's right when the world was changing in college sports, and as a freshman, one day, I think I just found out online, like, oh, he's got an invite from Oregon. Like, okay, well, that's how it works now. So as a freshman in high school, he's out at everybody's, you know, certain prospect days, Ohio State, everybody. And so great win for Syracuse if it turns out. I mean, it's a running back tradition at Syracuse. I mean, it's a long time ago now.
We've had really, really good running backs over the years. That's for sure. And honestly, Fran Brown is known to be a really good recruiter. That's why they hired him a couple of years ago. He builds really great relationships. You know, he recruited Deion Dawkins to Temple. He recruited or was on that staff and helped recruit him. Same thing with Terrell Bernard to Baylor and Tyler Medakevich. And I know that because when he got the Syracuse job, I asked all of them about Fran Brown. And they all said the same thing about him in some way, shape, or form, which was, he is just a real straight shooter, honest dude, and that's what you appreciate about him. And I love that, to hear that.
Last year, some of the stories were like, he's maybe a little bit nuts. After losses. I don't have a feel for him.
You mean making guys run after, even though they won, though? They put him on the line and run. And somebody called it performative, right? I think someone on ESPN. And I would say this, if you know anything about Fran Brown, you might not like that he did it. It's certainly not performative.
Okay. Well, I don't, so I'll stay away from that. Okay, well, running backs. I don't need this to be in a fantasy context, although I do think we're getting close to the time of year where I can more easily get away with it. James Cook, Sal, is kind of like he's in between the running back at the low end, 6, and at the high end, 3. I was in a big one a couple of weeks ago where he went 106, 6th overall. Gibbs and Robinson, Detroit, Atlanta, are the two top picks in almost every draft. And sometimes you'll see James Cook as the third running back after Chase, Nacua, JSN, usually. Sixth is about the peak. What are your expectations for him to basically, in essence, repeat what he's done the last 2 years?
First of all, when it comes to rankings, I think, what kind of comparison do I want to make here? I want to make some sort of analogy. I want to say something like running backs are like chicken wings, right? They're all really good, but depending on what flavor you like, it's going to be different. You know, you may have drums or flats. You may like barbecue or hot or something like that, but they all work in some way, shape, or form, hopefully for you. And I think it depends on what you want in a running back and what James Cook does and what other running backs do. And, you know, obviously he's kind of a little bit of Mr. Everything, but I think to get to your question here, though, the Mr. Everything part hasn't completely shown up in the passing game as much recently.
Right.
And that's what we expected when he was drafted. I just think the volume will be less this year, giving him the ball, handing it to him. But I think that volume can be made up for by throwing. And I think a really big difference here this year is Pete Carmichael Jr. now being the offensive coordinator. Now, granted, he's not calling plays, but he has been with Alvin Kamara. He has been with LaDainian Tomlinson. One of the big traits of his offenses that he's been a part of is throwing the ball to the running back out of the backfield. Now, the Bills do have, obviously, we know, you know, Ty Johnson and even Ray Davis. Now, Ty Johnson, to me, is really the guy they like to throw the ball to on third down. And a big reason people, you know, talk about, why isn't James Cook, why is it Ty Johnson? One of the reasons is Ty Johnson is a good pass-blocking back. So if you're in a passing situation, you put him on the field, you have to account for that as a defense. James Cook may have been maybe improved there, but he's not Ty Johnson. So when he's on the field, you kind of know you're not going to get him blocking, and you might take advantage of him if he is blocking, maybe even. You know, he's probably going to go out for a pass. So you'd have to think about things like that when you're an offensive coordinator and when people think about why a guy isn't on the field as much. But last year, James Cook only had 40 targets. And to me, to repeat the year he had rushing is going to be really way too tough. I think it's, 1,600 yards leading the league. Who can expect that? But I do think he can be better than he was in the passing game and have, you know, I don't know, maybe 400 yards as opposed to 291. And I think that can make up for some of that.
I'll just butt in here to say that I never bought Cook as a good receiver. Mm-hmm. Really was. It was sort of a stereotype based on his size, I think. And really in 4 years, he hasn't really shown to be that good at it. I mean, there are some famous drops and the volume isn't there. A few things. Johnson is 20 pounds bigger. We talk a lot this time of year about guys getting, you know, changing their weight. That's on defense right now with a new coordinator, a new scheme. It's always Dalton Kincaid, you know, stronger, bigger. Would you be an advocate, or do you expect anything of this sort in terms of Cook? Because he's been so successful, I would think they don't want to mess with his frame.
Yeah, I wouldn't think that either. I don't think they want – he's a smaller guy, but he's better smaller. I think if you put weight on James Cook, you make him bigger. First, I don't know if it's going to work. He just doesn't have that frame, as you point out. Secondly, I think it might take away some of his explosiveness. James Cook is an explosive runner. Now, I mean, if you lined up everybody at the goal line and ran a 40-yard dash, I don't know if he's actually, you know, he's going to be the guy that stands out and go, oh my God, he's this blazing fast guy like you get some receivers. But that man's vision and the way that he can move quickly and change direction and get to a spot where he can just run away from people, that's where his explosiveness is. Look at the run against the Jets. Look at the run against Carolina. Those are the runs I'm talking about last year in New York. I mean, these are times when he gets to the second level and he just makes one cut and he just runs away from people because he understands. James Cook is a really smart football player, by the way. Very smart football player. He understands angles. He sees things really well. He knows how to and when to get down, when to take big hits, and I think they're very comfortable with knowing that they can still give him the ball at his frame, and he understands all that.
I also think that running backs' numbers, like volume when it comes to pass catching, is often a function of who the quarterback is and whether he's any good and what are the other weapons. And the Bills are kind of both, where we're always questioning their pass receiving weapons, but Allen, so often, what's the play? Third and four? Second and six or something, he's going. He's not a quarterback like that is not, unless it's sort of his first read, which why would it often be that? He's not going to the flat for Cook. So would that have to be different for his numbers to spike up? Like Pete Carmichael, fine. Does it really depend on Allen, though, to sort of recalibrate how he sort of goes about his job?
Yes, and I think it's yes is the answer, but in conjunction, it's not just Pete Carmichael. Pete Carmichael, to me, can come up with a scheme to allow that to be there, and then you call some built-in plays. But on a play-to-play basis, when Allen's dropping back and his first read is down the field and his second read is over to the right hash mark and then his third read might be to dump it down, yes, that's where that comes in. But we've talked with Joe Brady about this as well, and you know, Joe will tell you that that's on the play caller and it's on the quarterback. Like, the play caller builds in different reads to know when to get to that, and then the quarterback has to decide, do you want to take that chance or do you want to just dump it down? You know, last year going into the year, I felt, look, and listen, this was, and again, now this is going back a year and a half ago now, we're at the owners meetings, and I remember the conversation with Sean McDermott where he kept talking about a way to get the ball down the field sometimes is simply just to give it to the guy who can run it down the field, even through the air. Like, you don't have to throw it over everybody. Just get it to somebody who's going to rig yards after catch. And I just felt, and it kind of happened when the year started, which was tell Josh, just take the easy button. Take the easy button. Throw it to James Cook out of the backfield. Throw it to Ty Johnson out of the backfield. No one's really covering them. It's 5-6 yards. Why not do that? I think as the year went on, we saw a little bit less of that. But I do think that's partly Joe Brady, like also his influence or what he wants to do. And I wonder where Joe is on that. I believe that this year, given the fact that the Bills changed out Sean McDermott and therefore the defense, but did not change out the guy who's calling the offense, I think that tells me they want to lean into more of what that guy wants to do. And I think that guy wants to push the ball down the field more.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here we go. Shotgun, trips right from the far hash, Cook to Allen's right, Shakir in the slot with Kincaid, and who do you want? Say, well, let's say DJ Moore. On either side, you send Kincaid, Shakir in motion right to left, take the snap, fake the handoff, clear out, Moore runs a intermediate to deep route. Here's Kincaid, you know, something. It's man-to-man look, and then you dump it off to Cook, and there's your big play. How easy is this?
There you go.
How much does it pay to be an offensive coordinator, really, Sal? I mean, just simple game, easy game. There it is.
Yeah, and Mike, let's remember, a lot of teams, now, I think last year the Bills did see more man-to-man than they normally do, but we've talked about this. If you play man-to-man against the Bills, you are at risk of turning your back and Allen. Josh Allen running.
Yep.
You're also at risk of this very thing happening, which is him saying, I'm just going to dump it down to a guy because he's coming out of the backfield and you guys aren't going to be able to catch up with him or turn around and tackle him until he gets a few yards down the field. So teams will play zone against the Bills. And I think last year that did change a little bit for whatever reason, but that's part of it, which is when you have a running quarterback, it's harder to do these kinds of things. It's harder for him to dump it down a little bit sometimes because teams are just keeping everything in front of them and there isn't that easy button there normally would be.
Well, Cook did run up, not to make the whole conversation about him, although we've done it before. He did run up 342 touches in the regular season and then another 43 in the playoffs. It was a serious workhorse year for him. And now going into another season, what is it, four behind him at 27? It'll be 27 in September. Maybe it's a year away, maybe it's more. But for his body type, we're getting close to a point. This is what we talked about sometimes when his contract was up, like just sort of how much more mileage do you get? We are at a point where that conversation, I think, Sal, has died down, that sort of fervor about, oh, you can't pay running backs after a certain,
right,
because of McCaffrey and Henry,
yep,
and even guys like Jacobs or Aaron Jones. I mean, you have a number of guys that have held up pretty well, but there was logic behind the thinking that it was a replaceable position and that there's a certain limitation to how much work you can handle. So that'll be interesting this year with Cook too. If he can pass block, he shouldn't come off the field, really. Like, only when he's tired should he come off the field. But is that something, just last thing on him maybe, is that something teachable? It's been 4 years. But the Ty Johnson versus Cook point Is that something where the Bills can get Cook without taking away from what his value has been to a point where he can? Because that's a strategic advantage if he's on the field. It's just one more thing for the defense to not assume.
Teachable, yes. Technique, you can definitely teach those things. But at the end of the day, I mean, at his size and certain guys who are great at, you know, what they do on the other side of the ball, there's only so much he can probably do. But yeah, it's not something he's done his whole life as much. So yeah, he can get better at it. And I do think he was better last year. He actually did, you know, did a little bit more of that last year. We saw it in training camp, and it was, you know, something that showed up a little bit more what he did. And he talked about it when he got the contract, like it was one of his goals. So I don't want to sit here and say like he's terrible at it, but you can get better. But I think there's a ceiling on a guy like that at that size to be able to have that skill set.
Right on. Sal Capaccio with me, Mike Shope, here on the Western Hotline. This is WGR. Bulldog is off this week. Well, Cook in fantasy is somewhere between running back 3 and 5 or 6, usually. It's fun. As a Bills fan, it's fun to decide between James Cook and Christian McCaffrey or Ashton Jeanty. Like, those are the running backs who might come in above him, but when you get past that, you're talking about Achan, and then a nice little run in the second round, Chase Brown, Kenneth Walker, Omarion Hampton, Saquon Barkley in some order. So in fantasy, it comes down to like how you want to build your team. But Cook is getting first-round love in fantasy.
McCaffrey's
football.
30 years old now, too. He just turned 30, by the way.
Yeah, he's another one.
To your age point. And he's still, I mean, he had 1,200 yards last year.
Yeah, and he'll catch 80 balls in his sleep, you know, if he's healthy.
Right.
So no signs. His efficiency was a little bit down, but still, like, that's a guy you love. You know what's not really a debate in fantasy, by the way, is Allen is everybody's quarterback one. They're, like, everybody. He goes 2 rounds before anybody else. That could be May. Wow. That could be Daniel. Daniels is later. Like, who even knows? Jackson. Like, Allen is on his own tier in fantasy as an asset. Really, he is. Again, he is one where you, like, all right, do I want to pick a quarterback this early? I usually don't. But the challenge is, like, do I get sort of blocked out on Josh Allen by the end of the draft season, right? Like, he is everybody's quarterback one, literally 2 rounds from the 3rd to the 5th in many drafts to the second guy.
I mean, Mike, it's just amazing to me that for several years now, not just 1 or 2 years, right, but I mean, going back 5, 6 years, the talk about his rushing touchdowns and I just can't keep this up. And it just continues to happen every year. It doesn't matter. Just does it. You know, he just has monster numbers in scoring, touchdowns. It's incredible. And it's just something that every year we're hearing, oh, that can't keep happening. That can't keep happening. They're going to do something different. He's going to run less. Ah, the tush push, whatever the reason might be. And I get it. I'm not even saying that that's not like warranted to think that way. It just hasn't happened. And last year, 14, year before 12, year before 15, I guess we'll go back, you know, 3 years he's had those numbers, but even then he comes in the league with 8, 9, and 8, right? I mean, come on.
Yeah, and we've talked about this many times, but it might be my single favorite stat to look up on Pro Football Reference is rushing touchdowns career, because Allen, if he lasts, he is going to be, it's going to be legendary stuff. Like, he's already 23rd all time.
He's amazing.
He's 2 behind Frank Gore. Frank Gore, who was here, Frank Gore Sr., played forever and was always sort of a frustrating Hall of Fame debate because, like, he was never really great, I would say, but he compiled and, you know, had this 15-year career. Well, Allen, by week 3, could be past him in career rushing touchdowns with no mention of his, you know, passing, his quarterback play otherwise. And the names just get more impressive. He's one away from Edgerrin James.
Have you looked at this yet? Have you looked at it recently to know where could he fall by the end of this year if he has another typical Josh Allen
year?
Sure.
I mean, if you have 12,
yep,
he's right behind Barry Sanders. Like, he's 12th all time if he has 12 rushing touchdowns this year.
Right. He probably won't catch Barry because he would need 19 or 20 this year. 20 this year. But he certainly can catch the guys right behind him, Jerome Bettis and Franco Harris. Oh, by the way, Eric Dickerson and Curtis Martin. I mean, pretty unbelievable thing. Marshawn Lynch. He has a legitimate chance to catch Marshawn Lynch halfway through the season.
Before the bye week. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it doesn't slow down, that will happen. I mean, he's going to get to 90 this year unless there's a downturn, which could be, you know, one thing Warren Sharp said to us when he was on is he thinks the Bills will be having to chase the game more this year because of who they're playing. And that could be good for Allen's passing numbers. But, and, you know, if he gets into goal to go from the four, no matter what the score is, he's probably going, if not Cook. But, you know, maybe game scripts are a little bit different for him. Okay, well, one time during the NCAA tournament, which is, I know, a few months ago now, Sal came on and we talked about strategy in a survivor pool. And you were down to like maybe the final eight or four teams and needed to figure out how to navigate. Who do I, what's the game theory here, right? That was, am I close on this memory?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. They could, it was more about strategy than the actual teams at that point.
Yes. So I've got one for you if you have another minute.
I love it. Yeah.
World Cup. Okay. Same idea. Survivor. And I've got France and England, and you can't use a team more than once. So out of almost 4,500 teams, we're down under 100 that are live. And I have two options here, Sal, and only two. Argentina and Spain are not in the equation. I've used them both.
Okay.
I can either go, and I don't even know if you're really keen to the World Cup. I hope so, since I'm wasting your time with this. But
I have loved watching the World Cup. Good. Yes. And I'm not normally a big soccer fan, but I definitely like this stuff and I've loved this one. I am not, I know about these teams, but not in depth. Yes.
It's been so great. And I can't wait to rail against it as soon as we're done talking, but it's been so great. I have two choices, France against Spain and then England in the final to win over France, or England over Argentina and then France over England in the final. The betting slant would easily be the latter. England is favored against Argentina, not by a lot. France is not even like a massive favorite either. Spain is great. So the chalkier choice is to go England and then France. But it would pay better, if I'm right, I have to be right, to go France and then England. Any thoughts?
Why would it pay better?
Because fewer people will do it. France is such a favorite that more people in my position would put England first and then save France for the finals.
I think my thought is you're trying to win at this point and you're not trying to necessarily win the most money. You're trying to win, right? But if you win, you still win and you're going to get money.
Yes. If I play the chalkier, that's right. You're exactly right. If I play the chalkier option, as long as I'm right, I'll win something. England winning the World Cup would be easier to hedge. Like if I got through France and then I have England left and they're an underdog against France, which they almost definitely would be, then I can bet England with money I don't have.
Yep.
And win either way. But it's 100 grand up top, so I want to get it right.
Do you have a thought specifically on each game and think, do you think that betting England against Argentina is smart or not?
Yes. In fact, I planned for it.
Okay.
I had the option on Saturday to pick England or Argentina and have the same situation in reverse. If I'd picked England on Saturday, I took Argentina instead because I think England is better.
Okay.
They're tough, Sal. England is finally tough. England got tough.
They did.
In Miami, the comebacks, winning in Mexico City, nobody does that. I'm definitely vibing with England.
That was an amazing, amazing match, by the way.
It was. Can you take a trombone into a Bills game, speaking of World Cup? Do you happen to know? Is that on the list of things you can't take?
If you're part of the band that's performing at halftime, you can.
If you're not, forget it.
I think forget it.
Any instrument other than that one guy with the guitar? All other instruments? A kazoo? Band? What is it? What are the rules on
this? It is pretty funny. The one guy, by the way, that's John. He's a friend of mine, and you're right. I mean, they allow him with the guitar. I don't even know. Maybe other people can bring guitars, too.
Grandfather. You know what? That's a thing you should test. Why don't I get to take a guitar?
Well, wait a minute. Now, can I bring drumsticks in? Because it's like a stick, right? I mean, like I
don't even know.
I don't know.
You can't take an umbrella in, right?
No, you're not allowed to do that.
What about a tomato? It's food. I'm supposed to buy food.
I don't
think
you're allowed to bring your own food in. It's like the
peanut butter.
There's a Stephen Wright joke about that, by the way, about bringing food into a movie theater as well.
Is that right? I want to look that up. All right. I've taken you for a ride here. Thanks for your time, Sal.
You got it, man.
Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. His appearances on WGR brought to you by Outlet Liquor. What's your outlet? We can love the World Cup all we want. The replay stuff continues to be a nightmare. I mean, if this is your hill to die on, it's kind of mine. It's never going to get better. It just keeps getting worse. And both games on Saturday raised questions about why are we bothering? What is actually happening with this? We've got a ball off a cable, but we can't review that, or we just don't notice it. We've got the dive and on the Swiss guy, and he's thrown out. I mean, he had a yellow card already, but both. It's just always more of the same. Let me get my breath, and then we'll talk about this like adults. 803-0550 is the number. I'm Mike Shope. This is WGR.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.